I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sans Pants Radio. Why did the Clydesdale give the pony a glass of water? Because he was a small horse.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey guys, just a quick heads up before we launch into the episode. Starting next Monday, the Movie Maintenance crew are bringing you a series of radio plays. Some of them you'll recognize from previous episodes.
Like Dracula.
Or Springsteen.
Or pretty much any of them that aren't covered by copyright. Others will be original stories. We're aiming to bring you one new play every month, complete with professional actors and sound effects and stuff.
Although the Dracula play still has me, so I'm sorry about that.
So yeah, check out Movie Maintenance Presents starting next week.
Also, a new web series produced by the Movie Maintenance crew, Bogan Book Club, has just launched on Sans Pants CinemaScope. It probably has roughly zero relevance to non-Australian audiences, but you get to see Handsome Tom's handsome face, so it's not a total write-off.
Anyway, if none of that is of any interest to you, we're sorry, and enjoy the episode.
Welcome to another episode of Movie Maintenance, where some TV shows just need fixing. I'm Damien.
I'm Gabe.
And I'm Tom.
This week, we're looking at Sherlock.
Yeah, all right, Sherlock.
Sherlock, yes.
How do we feel?
I mean, ultimately, I came into season four, right? You had already seen it, Gabe.
Yes.
And you had shown some disappointment in the series.
Gabe doesn't do some.
No.
Or
no.
Disappointment. No. It's more just rage.
Yeah.
Or erections for Gabe. Sometimes
rage
together.
Erection. So, that's the scale.
It's a stark binary, but I subscribe to it.
Yeah, nothing. Sure. So I came in, I was pretty much like, No, I'm still going to have a good time at Sherlock. It's the gang back together. We waited, a year and whatever fucking however long.
Well, we had that really good
Abominable Bride. I was not including that.
I don't think the show really included that either.
No, it like,
no,
it didn't.
No,
like, at the end of
definitely
the
not.
At the end of The Abominable Bride, the whole thing with Sherlock's like, I know what Moriarty's going to do next. It's like, cool, what's Moriarty going to do next? Opening scene. I don't know, but something. Literally, that was more. Well, yep. Hang on, that was pretty much what he said, wasn't he? He was like, I don't know what, but it'll be something big.
No, right. The best part of that was it's like Sherlock's on drugs again. Are you high? I'm high on life. Oh my God, shoot me in the face.
I have this theory about Stephen Moffat. I feel like he just, and I don't really consider myself a Moffat basher. You know, there are people who outright hate him.
Sure.
And make a career on like savaging him on Tumblr and whatever. But like, honestly, I think
that's a career choice. What do you do with your life? Oh, I want to savage Moffat on Tumblr.
Moffat on Tumblr.
Oh, you're hired.
No, but I legitimately think that Moffat is a very, very good writer. I think he does twists like no one else. Yep. I think he's very, very clever in how he constructs his stories. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when I try to get people into Doctor Who, Blink is the first episode I will direct anyone to. Followed closely by probably The Girl in the Fireplace, like, which are classic Moffat episodes.
Mm. The thing with Moffat, though, is he hits on a good twist and then he doesn't let go.
He's somebody who really needs to learn that the audience are idiots and they don't know what they want. Because the moment he does something that gets received well, he just bombards you with it. And I mean, like, honestly, I think Coupling is probably the funniest sitcom of all time. And that was him.
Well, that's a stretch,
but
I'll
very, very funny.
It's all right. It's not the funniest of all time.
But I can't think of much that I've laughed in more than I have in Coupling.
Parks and Rec. Parks I'm looking Rec. At Damo.
Anyway, irrelevant. Season 1 and 2 of Sherlock were both great, give or take the middle episodes. And then season 3 kind of started, and it was just immediately like they were pandering to the fandoms, and particularly to the whole Tumblr fandoms. Mm. Like, these are all the different versions. Here's one where Sherlock gets with Molly. Here's one where Sherlock gets with Moriarty.
Yeah.
Here's like the whole Best Man episode, which is just Sherlock and John, like, you know, material for Sherlock and John shippers for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so pandering. And The Abominable Bride for me was the absolute nadir of the show, and totally like season 3, I was like, you can come back from season 3.
Yeah.
Abominable Bride, I was like, I no longer take the show seriously.
Yeah. No.
Because the whole thing,
I've written,
like,
enough stories to know when I'm in one.
Oh,
Sherlock.
My God, that,
oh God.
Mate, and just jump off the waterfall and
jump off. And, like, have the heroic music as you're falling down, and then it was all a dream. And here's Moffat being like, oh, I get bashed for not writing women good. I'm gonna make a thing that's all about feminism, but not good. Like, you took so much delight in all the sexist jokes, and then you were like, oh, but women deserve equality too, and that's what this is all about the whole time. It's like, what?
No, it's I get bashed for feminism, so I make the women the Ku Klux Klan of Victorian era London.
What the?
That'll help my image problem.
Anyway, Abominable Bride, I got to the end of it, and I was like, fuck this show so fucking hard. Just drop Moriarty. Please, like, what was so good about the ending of season 2 is the fact that Moriarty's going to stick around,
yeah.
And then he was just dead. And it was like, and I remember thinking, holy fuck, you've blown your Moriarty load now, 6 episodes in, where the fuck are you going to go from here? Not far.
No, they went. Season 4, he's still dead, and the whole thing is,
he
what's
turns
his
up
last
in just about
thing?
Every episode.
It is honestly ridiculous was that he shows up at all.
Was it you who was telling me that since his death, he's appeared in like every episode but like 2?
So in the first episode of season 3, he appeared in the whole what if it happened like this.
Yep.
I don't think he was in the second
episode.
No,
he's not in the second episode.
No.
He was in the third one with the Did You Miss Me? And he was in Sherlock's Mind Palace when Sherlock got shot by Mary.
Yep.
He was in The Abominable Bride quite heavily.
Yep.
He was in... I'm pretty sure he was in the first
episode. He's mentioned. You don't actually see
like
him.
They talk about, because the whole thing is, what's his post-humorous move going to be? Who cares? He's dead. Like, why the fuck does he even
and
have
also,
a post-humorous
move? And also, can I just
say,
like, when we got into season 4, what was his posthumous move?
He didn't have
what was it? It was like, I'm going to go
guys,
and like, touch up.
I think you will find he built a maze with Sherlock's sister that completely invalidates his endgame plan in season 2. The last episode of season 4, and having Moriarty have this weird... Having Sherlock have a sister for a start is fucking dumb as
shit.
Why is
the final episode a Saw movie?
It was completely
a Saw movie. Like, here's the next room with this psychological trap that will fuck you up. Here's the next one. Incomplete with like,
also,
the tapes.
Totally innocent people died.
Yeah.
And there were no consequences for that.
No. And the fact that the end thing that got them out of it was Sherlock going, I'm going to shoot myself. Okay, you know she wants you alive. Do that right from the start. Because that's how you get your power back in that situation.
What annoyed me was that the bit that snapped Sherlock wasn't when a grown man shot himself in the head, wasn't when 3 people died instead of 1, was when they gave him an empty coffin that was Molly Hooper.
And
I'm so angry. No, you're not angry. And then also...
Oh, but Tom, the theatrical way he smashed apart a coffin.
I particularly love the slow motion.
Oh, yeah.
And the silence as he was screaming.
Is Sherlock's sister, not even going to attempt to say her name because it's dumb.
Euros?
No.
Euros.
What?
The East Wind.
Let's just call her the East Wind.
I'm about to go Rogue One on your ass in a minute.
Except we agree. So,
I know.
So what's that gonna
even
look
more
like?
Concerning for you. But is she insane? So is she like an evil person who is also crazy and has a split personality that's a 10-year-old girl on an aeroplane?
Yes. I guess.
Yes.
Just what would make that episode better if there was literally a girl on a plane instead of, the way I'm going to solve this is that my sister's in our house and she just wants someone to play with her. Why the fuck do you have a sister?
Right.
Why the fuck? Oh, my God. The whole thing was so dumb.
Oh, yeah. So Sherlock just happened to forget about it and block it all off because his dog died.
Right.
Okay, I'm pretty sure, like,
no, it wasn't
all
his dog,
dogs.
It was his best mate.
Oh, fuck, that's right.
Little redhead
kid. See, I've already forgotten.
But even that, he forgot. It felt like a soap opera. I'm like, this is a fuck. This is a storyline from a soap opera.
And also, like, it's just can we go back to solving mysteries? Right. Instead of like, the first episode was a spy thing, like a globetrotting spy thing with Mary. Yeah. The third episode was a globetrotting spy thing. Most of season three was either like the whole best man episode or like a terrorist cell under London.
So the issue with season four for me is that it completely either rehashes beats they've already done or invalidates stuff they've already done. So
it felt like final, fan fiction.
Yeah, the final episode completely makes the whole Moriarty's plan in the final episode of season two irrelevant.
Yeah.
If he knew that he was going to die, well, then why goad Sherlock into killing himself? Because you know he's going to live and eventually track down his sister. And so that's dumb. Yep. So already when you start thinking about it, you get tired. The first episode, they literally take the same beat they did with Mary, which was slightly interesting when they did it the first time.
Yeah.
And they just retread it. It's exactly the same thing. She keeps a secret about her past from John. She tries to run away. John and Sherlock track her down. She spills her guts to Sherlock, and Sherlock reveals actually John's in the room as well.
Yeah.
Mary's heartbroken. That's exactly the beat they did in the episode. You find that she's a hitman at end of season
two
three.
2 episodes later. I mean, I know it's like 2 years later, but really, if people are binge watching this, that's exactly episode, the same.
Yeah, correct.
2 episodes later.
Episode two of season four. I can't even remember while I'm talking about it right now.
It was the one with the serial killer.
Colbert and Smith.
Yeah.
The whole Jimmy Savile thing.
Oh, yeah, like Jimmy Savile. Yeah.
Which I have to say was the only good thing of that was it was a genuine mystery.
Yeah, I think that was the closest return to form. But still
not great.
No, there, and the only issue was the return,
go to hell, Sherlock. And he's meant to literally torture him,
and,
like,
and also
on
that,
the posthumous
the
Mary
like,
video.
How many posthumous Mary videos does she leave? And they're all like, Sherlock and John, Sherlock and John, Sherlock and John. What about, I don't know, your child?
Right.
Or maybe one exclusively for John? You know, it's been said over and over again ad nauseum, but like, why, what is this thing with this show where all anybody cares about in this universe is Sherlock and John?
Yeah.
That's all anybody seems to give a shit about. Yep. Everybody's completely fixated on them. None of the characters seem to have lives outside these two characters or wondering what these two characters are doing or worrying about these two characters. And that's this very Moffat thing where he takes this like this central character who's like a bit eccentric, a bit interesting, and it comes back to that whole thing where he sees something people like and he just doubles down
does
on
it again
and he realizes, okay, cool, Sherlock and the Doctor are both kind of these cult heroes. So they become cult heroes in the worlds of the show as well. Doctor Who's the same. Under Moffat, all anybody in that universe gives a shit about is the Doctor.
Yeah.
And, you know, that wasn't necessarily the case early on. Same with Sherlock. Like, Sherlock was kind of this annoyance to most of the characters in the show, except for John. By the time you get to the end of season, even the end of season two, it's like Lestrade, who didn't really like Sherlock or give a shit about him, suddenly is like, I want to know what Sherlock's doing. All I care about is Sherlock. We're all still, like, obsessed with him 2 years after he died and all of this. And then there's all these, like, weird, cringeworthy fan wank moments, like when Sherlock gets on the boat at the end of the season four and he's like, and they're like, Sherlock Holmes, the detective? And he's like, no, the pirates.
Oh,
and there's
my God.
And I was like,
what? He all of a sudden he was a fucking superhero. He had literally the fly down moment with his coat behind him.
That's
to me, that's the issue for this whole season four. Same with The Abominable Bride and a bit of season three. Is it just when every character becomes a fucking superhero? Like
Mrs. Hudson as well.
Mrs. Hudson.
Can I say, I'm about to say the only character that has a life outside of Sherlock is Mrs. Hudson, but her life is like she's a drug dealer
or something. Yeah. Like it just
her husband.
Speaking of where they go too far with like your central character, for me, the biggest sin, even though they partially redeemed it, the biggest sin of season four was making John Watson an asshole.
Yeah.
At no point, because John Watson is the human part of Sherlock.
When he like,
at no point should I feel more empathy for Sherlock than I should for John Watson.
Sure.
When they intimated that he cheated on his wife, I was like, no.
But also,
no.
Why? Like, what? Yeah.
And then to go with, okay, if you're going to go down that road, then make him cheat on his wife. Don't, I never did anything about it, though.
Then what was the point? And the whole thing, even episode two, which again,
it was a dick tease for the audience. That was the point.
The thing with, like, John imagining Mary and her, like, talking the room and everything.
Oh, my God.
Okay, that's a real thing that irritates me is, like, when you kill off a character,
kill them off,
and don't bring them back. Because the thing about death in real life is when somebody dies, the most upsetting thing about somebody's death is that they're no longer there.
Yeah, it is
and
finite.
You feel the vacuum of this person is not here anymore. When you kill a character off and then you perpetually bring them back, be it in flashbacks or in the character's head or in whatever form, what's the point? They might as well never have gone in fiction. Because, you know, Mary's just there. We still feel her presence. We don't have a chance to miss her. And so, and I'm talking about audience members who, you know, might have been especially attached to Mary. I wasn't really when she died. I was like, yeah, okay, sure.
I liked Mary before she was a spy.
Yeah, me too.
Because again, all of a sudden you take an ordinary person and making them a superhero. Fuck that.
If you're going to make Mary a spy, though, you need to do it once. You don't rehash the same story beat.
I generally
times.
Don't think it was needed at all. I think she was a regular person who could match wits with Sherlock and Watson, and that made her awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, it's very interesting. We talk about Moffat and the shit that he cops for his treatment of women on screen. The only character that can keep up with Sherlock, who's a woman, is either like an evil genius like Irene Adler.
Yeah.
Or a super spy.
Right.
Or a drug dealing old lady. Because not even Molly can keep up with him.
No.
Yeah.
Or his evil wind sister.
Well, even the sister. So to talk about Moffat and women, he literally had this stereotypical psychopathic woman who just wants the attention of men. Like, yeah, that's literally what she's begging for.
All of them. Like, Adler had that. Like, yeah. She was just...
Adler had the great thing where she was a lesbian until she met Sherlock.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
There's a whole thing where she's like, oh, yeah, like, she's... Or not a lesbian necessarily, but that she's bisexual.
Sure.
She meets Sherlock and she's like, oh, fuck women, I'm
Moffat
in
right. But Moffat has this really weird obsession with bisexual women. Almost every... I'm pretty sure every female character Moffat has ever written alludes to, like, either being bisexual or having a bisexual phase. Clara in Doctor Who did it. River Song did it. Oh, fuck, who else? The lesbian Silurian girl and her Jenny in Doctor Who. Irene Adler.
Eurus alludes to it as well.
Yeah, she does too, doesn't she?
Yep.
Like, it's just this weird obsession he has with...
Do you know what he is? He's a 14-year-old boy playing The Sims for the first time, and you just make all the female characters lesbian so you can have girls having sex.
Well, I mean, have you seen the... have either of you seen Coupling or much of it?
No, not really.
So one,
a lot of it.
The classic episode of Coupling I always point people to, which is really funny, but then you look at it in context of Moffat's later work and suddenly it makes a whole lot more sense, is this episode where the main character, Steve, who's obviously meant to be Moffat, he actually is meant to be like Moffat.
He's literally called Steve.
He's called Steve.
Fuck,
he's a television writer. Like, he's...
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
But Moffat is open. He's like, Coupling is based on my relationship with my wife.
Yeah.
And basically every episode...
Does his wife
like,
hate him? I'm kidding.
Maybe.
I'm not kidding.
Basically, the whole thing in this episode is that Steve has this whole awkward thing where he leaves a porno in the video player, and the next day he goes in there and the porno's been taken out of the video player and put on top of it, and he's like, fuck, my girlfriend found it. And the whole episode is like waiting for the bomb to drop of when is she going to confront him about it. Mm-hmm. And the porno like is like, obviously, and Moffat said it's like, oh, it was just the most naughty thing I could think of. It's called Lesbian Spank Inferno.
Oh,
and the whole episode is about... just as many excuses to say Lesbian Spank Inferno as possible.
Wow.
It
really just... Do you reckon Moffat was dumped by, like, dated a girl or was interested in a girl who he then discovered was a lesbian?
That happens in Coupling to his character. His ex-girlfriend is a lesbian.
I'm going
to
say yes.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Or leaves him for a girl. It's been a long time since I watched Coupling. Anyway, a lot of lesbians in Coupling too.
He just is an interesting... Also, the only character who calls Sherlock out on his bullshit is absent for most of the later season, and that's the other detective with the frizzy hair.
Yep.
I can't remember her name at all, but she's the one who first accuses him of being a psychopath.
Mate, we can't be having agency in Sherlock. Any character who isn't Sherlock.
No, correct.
It's just...
Well, the other agent who originally despised him ends up falling in love with him, basically.
Yeah, like, I'm literally becoming
obsessed with him. Anderson, that's the one, yeah.
See, again, you watch the first two seasons of Sherlock, in particular the first season, and then, look, Sherlock for the first two seasons was brilliant. It did some really cool stuff. It recreated some iconic characters in a contextual setting.
Yes.
Having Moriarty as just a madman and not crotchety old scientist, brilliant.
Yep.
Having all of these different elements and Sherlock obsessed with Twitter and the internet, brilliant.
Yeah.
It then, after season two, season one, I don't know how big it was after season one, I think reasonably.
Pretty
season
big.
Two, it really took off.
Yeah.
So by the time it hits season three, which is it has started to crawl so far up its own asshole that you can't see the show anymore. It's just it's just in jokes. Sherlock 1 and 2 work because, yes, there is a through line through all of them. But I could show you the Hound of the Baskervilles episode before I showed you any other episode of Sherlock. Yep. And you'll be able to watch
You'd love it,
You can't do that anymore.
No.
Every episode is... Yep. Yes, the previous episodes were always linked, but not to such an extent that they are now.
That's it. And to me, that's the thing. There's two problems. One, the show was really good. That's why we're all getting so worked up, is because it was a genuinely good show that you ruined. How did they ruin it? Like, basically, the worst thing you can do is make a character act out of what you've set up that character to be.
Yeah.
This show has acted out of how you set up the show to be, because it's just gone way too big. Like, every character, every scenario, where the start, like, I don't even like that he's famous. I don't. As soon as he became famous, I'm like, does he need that?
Well, it tied in nicely with the actual episode where he starts becoming famous, the Riken Bashor, where Moriarty uses his fame against him.
Yeah.
But I think if he comes back then, make him infamous.
Yeah.
If Moriarty's set up that he's a piece of shit, when he comes back, people are like, nah, you're a piece of shit.
I do feel like, just before we get into Damo's take, because we've been going on about this for a while, but I do...
There's a lot to go on about, There's a lot to go on about.
I do feel like, though, there was this weird thing where it's like, again, coming back to Moffat's whole, I can't let go of a good thing. Hmm. With Moriarty, it was like, you know, the first six episodes, everyone was kind of a standalone mystery, although the Irene Adler stuff did sort of dovetail with Moriarty a bit. But, I mean, basically the Great Game and the Reichenbach Fall were sort of two parts of the bigger Moriarty story. Otherwise, they were standalone mysteries.
Even the first episode of season two has that three-minute clip at the start where you jump back into the pool.
Exactly. Again. And then the rest of it is completely its own thing. I feel like ever since then, Moffat's become really, and I think Doctor Who suffers from the same thing, he's become really obsessed with serialization and really obsessed with like everything being like the next big step and the next big step. And now we're building to the next big finale.
Right. And every episode has to
be a part of that. And it's like, well, no, it doesn't. Because like the Sherlock Holmes original stories were never this like ongoing, huge, overarching narrative that all built up to this grand finale. It was like, no, they were just characters you'd like solving mysteries.
Like the majority of them are literal short stories that stand alone on their own.
That's the charm of them. You can read any from any time and you don't need the context from the previous ones.
And the cliffhangers in the first couple of seasons were good cliffhangers.
Mm. Yes.
Like they weren't just like, oh, how far can we top? We can go. They were cliffhangers earned by the story. The cliffhangers at the end of the later seasons just feel literally just stuck on the end because it's like, we need to get people back again.
Yeah.
Whereas at least like the end of season one where they're in the pool and he points the gun at the bag and you go, right, well, this is actually part of the narrative. And the end of season two where he fucking falls off the roof and dies, you're like, this is part of the narrative. And but yeah, I just think, you know the expression jump the shark? I feel like Sherlock didn't just jump the shark, it became the shark.
Yes. Yeah.
Where's Quint when you need him? We're going to kill this shark.
I love you for making that analogy.
So ultimately, my main issue with season four is that it goes against what you set up as the show and it goes way too big. Ultimately, I genuinely think it could have ended at season three, not with that last episode from season three, because that's when we learn Mary's a spy, right?
And he shoots Magnuson.
He shoots Magnuson, all that crap.
The beginning of the end, because Magnuson was underused.
He was underused, but as a villain, I love the pissing in the fireplace. I love the, let me flick your eye.
Yeah.
I loved all of that stuff.
Keep him for a bit longer.
Well, I honestly reckon you could have, the wedding episode, while it is definitely having a lot of fun, too much fun arguably, I think would have worked really well as a final episode. You see their relationship, you see how Sherlock's grown. At the end, you still have him walking away from the wedding because he still doesn't really fit in. And you even have some fun crimes like the soldier who has like the knife and the belt.
Yeah.
He's got all these different little crimes that come together in a really nice Sherlockian logical way.
Yep.
And yeah, it's taking the piss and Sherlock's being ultra, you know, weird Sherlock who doesn't realize he's being weird, but everyone's laughing at him and all that sort of crap.
And he's hitting on that girl so that he can use her in the next episode. Yeah, guys?
But I honestly think that would have made a really nice last episode. It sort of sums up what the show was, how he's changed, but he walks away. He's still Sherlock. He's still a man alone as much as he's got best mate John over there. Anyway, my episode is pretty much I've just scrapped season four altogether.
What a wise decision, Damo.
Right? Yeah, so basically I've scrapped season four. I've just tried to make an episode that to me feels more like an episode from season one or season two. I've got a bit of a resolution for him shooting
Magnuson,
thank you. But that's sort of it. Otherwise, it's just a Sherlock episode.
Mads Mikkelsen's brother.
Yes. Lars.
Oh.
Lars and Mads. Show.
Yeah.
Do they have another brother called
Hans?
Hans or?
I don't know.
Gruber?
I don't know. I feel like I'm failing in my Mads knowledge here.
So anyway, that's what I'm coming in with.
Mads Matician. Sorry, Damo.
You proud of that?
I just knocked the mic, raising my hands to cover my face in exasperation at that. Damo, please continue.
All right. So we open on 221B Baker Street. Sherlock's sort of like sitting alone in his normal chair. He looks like crap. He's slumped, hair's a mess, stains on the clothes, even one of his teeth is chipped, and beside him sits a mug full of needles.
Quickly, before we keep going, because it's going on from him shooting Magnuson, do we still have the did you miss me thing?
I haven't included that. at all. Okay, so, cool. Up to you, mate.
Cool.
Do you want to keep that?
No.
Okay. So basically, I have taken, obviously, he goes on a bender, rah, rah, rah. Because to me, I'm like, Sherlock, as much as he killed him for the right reasons, it still would have affected him because
he's
not a fucking superhero. And so
he's an incredibly fucked up human being.
Right. So my reasoning is he's killed a man, he doesn't know how to cope with it, and that's what's got him onto the drugs. So
he's just high on life, Damo.
Oh, cheerful little Sherlock. So he's on a bender. And then as he's sitting, he's also talking. It kind of looks like he's talking to camera, but there's someone sitting opposite him. We just can't see who it is. And he's talking sort of like he's just sort of rambling on about like what promise he had as a kid. And we have a hard flashback to him shooting Magnuson. He's talking about his childhood. We see the shot again of Magnuson, how his parents were always so proud of him. Again, closer, more graphic. How they kept everything he ever did, every trophy, every prize. Cut to Magnuson sliding into a drawer at the morgue. And then Sherlock sort of mumbles something coherent and passes out. Then we cut to John's doctor's office. He's on his computer. He's writing a blog. We can see that it's about the Magnuson case and he's sort of having trouble ending it. We can see like the last line and it's sort of saying how one of Mycroft's men shot Magnuson, aiding in the cover-up. So I've sort of kept that. But like John's sort of a bit conflicted because he's like, well, is that the right thing to do, is to cover up, you know, Sherlock shooting someone? Then Mary opens the office door. John sort of panics and hurriedly like minimises the window and pretends he's doing back to doctory stuff.
I like that we've given John a job. It's about fucking time.
Right. Because originally, he was a doctor and Mary was like his nurse slash assistant, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, she sort of smiles at him. He was sprung. And she tells him, oh, next patient is here. Problem with his. And she like points down to her crutch. John sighs. He's like, yeah, let him in. So I'm going to try to do a few voices here. These are probably not going to be great impressions.
Let me make myself comfortable.
All right.
If they're anything like Vincent D'Onofrio, I'm on board.
Yeah, they're not quite as D'Onofrio as I would like them to be. I was practicing on the drive over here and it wasn't the best. Anyway, let's push on anyway. So after she tells him this, you know, next patient's got a crotchal problem, Lestrade walks in. And John's like, oh, hello. Oh, Greg. And then Lestrade's like, yeah, sorry to bust in on you like this, John. It's like, oh, no problem at all. All right, well, take off your pants. What? Your pants? I need you to, you're having a problem with your... And John sort of like looks down at his crotch. Well, no, I just sort of tugs on his pants a bit. I just want to talk to you about Sherlock. From outside, we hear Mary laugh, because of course she does. Because that was the Mary I liked.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, cool. If anything, she like beat them half the time.
Yeah.
Just because she wasn't as... you know, crazy obsessed with all their shit.
Yeah, yeah, she's above it all. Yeah, yep. Like it. Good. Also, Lestrade voice is pretty good.
Yeah, it's a very on point Lestrade voice.
It's good Lestrade.
Thank you, lads. So, yeah, anyway, John does his usual sort of frustrated John look. He's sort of very expressive as he does. And Lestrade's like, oh, can I have a seat? Of course, yeah, yes, of course. They talk and we learn that Sherlock's basically pushed everyone away from him. He's sort of hit the drugs hard and they're these two are at a loss of what to do. They sort of have a chat like, you know, should we try to get him a counsellor? Should we try all these different things? And then Mary sort of just comes in from the doorway. She's like, he just needs a case. And then they kind of look at each other like, oh, why didn't we think of that?
Again, I like the Mary that knows what's going on.
Right. Mary sort of rolls her eyes and Lestrade's like, oh, I'll see what I can do. Then Watson's outside Baker Street. He's got a bit of trepidation. He brings his hand up to knock. He pauses. You know, does he want to see his friend like this? It's been a while since he's seen him. Raises his hand, trying to psych himself up. Then just before he knocks, the door opens and Sherlock is busting out. Oh, John, good. I was just about to text. We've got a case. And then Sherlock just bustles John into a waiting cab and they're off.
Nice.
Cool.
I like this
theme song
than...
comes booming in.
Theme song comes much better.
I was playing the drums that come in at the start. Fuck you both.
So they're in the cab. John starts to question Sherlock about the case that he's dragging him to, but he sort of stops when he sees Sherlock's chipped tooth. And Sherlock's, he's still manic. He's still like a bit crazy Sherlock on the drugs. And John's like, Sherlock, your tooth's chipped. Wonderful powers of observation, John. How did you chip it? Does it matter? No, but you haven't been to the dentist? Obviously not. Sherlock's clearly not that really willing to talk about it. John looks out the window for a beat. Then he sort of asks, so what did Greg say about this case? Who? Lestrade. Oh, is your name really Greg? Then fuck. Watson's like, yes. Oh, nothing. This isn't from him. And then Watson's just like, well, what is it then? We cut to Sherlock's parents' home. John and Sherlock enter the small kitchen where Mama and Papa Holmes, as well as Mycroft, sit at the table. Mycroft makes a comment about, you know, he's so pleased to see Sherlock manage to make it out of the house, sort of that arrogant way that he does.
Can we just while you're on Mycroft, talk about how that, like, I don't know how to say his name, but as much as Stephen Moffat is a fuckhead, is it Gattis?
Mark Gattis.
I've made him French. He's just as bad because he's written his own character with of the good shit. Mycroft was excellent when he was in like 5 minutes of an episode here or there. He's in every episode.
And heavily in every episode too.
Oh, that whole bit where he's it's literally just feels like an actor playing a character being like, I want the good part.
Yeah, but again, like, you know, Mycroft in the first season was sort of like peppered throughout it and then he was reasonably well received.
Mm. Yep.
And suddenly Moffat and Gattis were like, yes, more of him.
Because he's about in every episode.
Oh, yeah.
He's in every episode of season
A major role
four,
in every episode.
Yeah.
Whereas in the original stories, I think Mycroft turned up like once or twice.
And he's usually just a fuckhead as well.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. They also make him like fucking God.
Yeah, that's the thing. They all become too powerful.
Yeah, right. What can you do? I can turn the king into a frog, Sherlock. Trust me.
Well, yeah, so they come into the parents' house and we learn that there's been a break-in into the house, which is what the case is. So Sherlock comes in and him and Mycroft sort of start bickering over who's going to solve the case, sort of Mycroft, with the might of the British government and Sherlock with his deduction and that sort of stuff, the usual sort of bickering they have. And then John, meanwhile, tries to do something useful and tries to take a list from Sherlock's parents of the things that were taken, but nothing that they can really tell has been taken, just that the door was busted open. And that even it was the back door, they hardly use it. They don't know how long it's even been like that for.
Was it an east wind?
It definitely was not.
Thank God.
In my version, there is no forgotten sister because this isn't a soap opera.
Also, why the fuck wouldn't Sherlock's parents bring up Sherlock's sister to Sherlock at any point in his life?
Yeah, it's like what they just forgot to mention and Sherlock. Right.
No. Mycroft like used his like really influential government powers that he had at age fucking 10 to make the parents shut up.
Anyway.
I'm going to go in one more deviation. The sister basically had magical powers to put people under her sway. She put the whole jail. Like, this is a logical show. The whole point of this show is that there is always an answer and it's logical and it comes together.
Yep.
She just took over the prison with her psychic abilities. What the
fuck? She was at once a bisexual, so she's probably really powerful.
Special psychic bisexual powers.
Psychic sexuality.
Once you become bisexual, you naturally get those psychic abilities.
I mean, that's the reason.
Yeah.
Let us know if you are bisexual and you have now gained psychic abilities like Sherlock's bullshit sister.
Try not to use it to create a sore type situation, but just let us
know. And if it's not the case, tell Stephen Moffat because he clearly needs to know.
Yeah, someone needs to tell him. So Sherlock comes in. He sort of starts going through each room of his house. He's doing a Sherlock thing where he's like all the different bits are coming up and like, everything's in its place. So he hasn't even noticed anything different while he's sort of scanning for clues until he comes into his bedroom. And we go in and it's very much like his room at the house. There's sort of like papers everywhere and old experiments. So like the idea that he was kind of like that as a kid. And then there's like a trophy corner where his parents have sort of put all these little trophies and ribbons that I'm guessing he got at a young age. And so he looks on there and that's when his brain detects beep, 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 something's missing. He sort of has this little outline of a rectangle. And there's a photo that used to be there of him like winning a science award or some shit like that that's gone.
Sounds like an obsessed sister to me.
I don't know. Where's the back door facing the east?
There's no fucking east wind, all right?
All right. That's what someone who's going to put the east wind in their show would say.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just wait, all right? So he keeps scanning and he notices like this small box. Well, he sort of sees in the dust there's sort of this spot where clearly there's something sitting, but it's not something that he can remember putting there. So he goes to his parents and sort of says, oh, look, there's something here missing. What was it? They don't really remember. As soon as this happens, he's sure it's all about him. This break-in was clearly Sherlock, you know, involved somehow. Maybe this is how you could fit the Moriarty thing in. Maybe it was Moriarty posthumous. Maybe this was his plan if we do want to include that, you know. He's just certain of it as soon as he realizes something's been taken from his bedroom. And then as soon as he mentions Moriarty's name, maybe he gets a text. Him and John both get a text. They look at it, they sort of freak out, but it's just Lestrade and he has a case for them.
What'd be really nice is instead of doing the did you miss me, Sherlock's like, it's Moriarty. And John's like, he's fucking dead.
Yeah, that's good. There's no even reason for it.
It's like, it has to be Moriarty. He has to have survived death. That's ridiculous. He's oh, yeah. Dead. If it's Moriarty, he'll have some connection. I bet you something weird will happen right now.
Yeah.
No, and then both their phones go off and they're both like, oh my God, oh, it's just Lestrade.
Okay.
You can even have another joke. Oh, it's just Greg.
Yeah.
Who?
Sherlock just blank. Lestrade.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Greg. I think Eurus would be a name that would suit him a lot better.
Is Greg even a name? So they arrive at this real sort of grand old manor in the English countryside. It's like something from Downton Abbey. Sherlock and John enter. And they meet Lestrade, who introduces them to Reginald Musgrave. So I've got him being played by Tom Bennett. Do you know guys who know who Tom Bennett is?
What's Tom Bennett in?
Have you seen Family Tree? It's a Chris O'Dowd show. Have you seen Love and Friendship based on the Jane Austen?
No.
Oh, you guys let me down. Life on the Road, the David Brent one.
No.
So basically he's this English comedic actor. He's genuinely hilarious. He's really good. He does like the dumb but happy guy character kind of really well. So that's kind of who this character is. His family's really old. They have sort of connections to the monarchy, but this guy himself is a bit simple. I'm literally just kind of stealing his character from Love and Friendship. And he's very excited by Sherlock Holmes being in his manor. Lestrade sort of comes in. He's like,
I bet he did it.
Like, this is Reginald Musgrave.
No, it's Eurus.
It's not fucking Eurus.
No, it's Moriarty. We actually don't even know what it is yet.
Someone stole that rectangle of Sherlock.
Lestrade's like, this is Reginald Musgrave, and this is Musgrave sort of cuts him off. Sherlock Holmes, in my house? Unbelievable. He's like, oh, I would have committed a crime to make that happen. Then there's sort of like an awkward silence. Oh, but no, I didn't. And then he sort of tells Lestrade, should I show him? Yeah. Musgrave takes him through to the library where he starts telling them in excessive detail this story with Sherlock sort of like hurrying him up the whole time because he's antsy from the drugs and he's getting bored. But Musgrave still like happily just tells his tale. And so the story is he's got the big house, he's got all these staff and butlers and maids and all this sort of stuff. And then last Thursday night he woke up in the middle of the night and went out to the library at like 2 a.m. and he came across the maid in the library and she was looking at one of his documents. So he sort of was, this is weird. So he sort of busts in. He's like, how dare you? And sort of tells her off, you know, you shouldn't be in here, rah, rah, rah. Very proud of himself that he did this. And then basically the thing she was looking at was this thing called the Musgrave Ritual. It's sort of this ceremonial document that's just been passed down through the generations of Musgraves for centuries, has no real practical use whatsoever. And then after that, he told the Maeve, yeah, you've got like one day, I want you out of here. You're clearly like trying to rob me or snoop around, whatever. And so the next night, the maid and one of his butlers both just disappear and they don't show up for a few days. So that's when Musgrave finally called in a missing persons case. Sherlock naturally tells Musgrave, you're an idiot. Clearly the Musgrave ritual is sort of involved in somehow. Musgrave's pretty just delighted that Sherlock's talking to him at all. So Sherlock looks at the ritual and this is how it goes. Whose was it? His whose is gone. Who shall have it? He who will come. Where was the sun? Over the oak. Where was the shadow? Under the elm. How was it stepped? North by 10 and by 10, east by 5 and by 5, south by 2 and by 2, west by 1 and by 1, and so under. What shall we give for it? All that is ours. What shall we give it? For the sake of the trust. So Sherlock's sort of thinking about it. He hasn't caught, like, he doesn't immediately
figure
it. I noticed
the word east in there.
I'm going to fucking lose it.
I would pay a large sum of money to see the normally pleasant Damo lose it.
I think we can get in there. Do you reckon? Continue unmolested, Damo.
I don't want to hear east wind.
Did you say unmolested or unwested, which is the opposite of east?
Ooh. Did I? No. I don't know.
Continue. I'm sorry. He's not angry. He's just disappointed and it's worse.
I know.
It's so much worse.
So bad.
All right. So John and Sherlock start searching the house for clues. They sort of look at Musgrave's room first and he's yammering on in the background. He sort of tells them, it still feels weird sleeping in there as it was his father's room for so long. His father just died a few months ago. Nothing seems to be stolen. There are these weird sort of like rings drilled into the wall above the bed that John sort of asked Musgrave about, but he doesn't know. Oh, that was Daddy's room. I never was allowed in sort of.
And there was Daddy's room. I didn't go in there. Yeah. Sherlock like sort a of Daddy's room in a 50 Shades of Grey house.
Yeah, exactly.
I wish you hadn't said that.
Continue.
Okay.
Continue.
I'm not going to say I'm molested because.
I'm molested. Or because of the room.
Yeah, no, that was what I was angling towards, but.
Okay.
Now I look like
A fool.
A bad person.
So Sherlock seems to know something about these rings, but he doesn't mention it because he's Sherlock. He's, you know, keeping all the cards to himself. They look in the maid's room and the butler's room. The maid's room is very neat and tight. She was clearly ready to go in a hurry. The butler's room is the opposite. It was messy. It was lived in. And Sherlock sort of deducts that this man wasn't intending to leave. And then he's searching through the room, finds this small sort of white object next to this boot print, and he thinks it's bone. He throws it to John and goes, looks to be bone, John. And John sort of looks at it and goes, ah, I would say part of a tooth. And a sort of revelation comes over him. He's like, oh, Sherlock, tooth. Could mean he was in a fight. Sherlock? But who? Could be the maid, although was she strong enough to chip a tooth? Sherlock! What? John holds up the tooth and we can see that it matches almost perfectly with a chip in Sherlock's tooth.
Of course it does. Oh.
Cut to Sherlock in the police station interrogation room. Across from him sit Lestrade and John. And so Lestrade starts off. He's like, right, well, this is weird. Sherlock's sort of confused. He's like, you're interrogating a suspect. What's weird about that? You do that all the time. Lestrade's like, yeah, but not usually to a, you know, he's sort of looking for the word friend. Sherlock stares at him. Nothing. John's just, he's not going to get it. Sherlock, superior detective? Lestrade's like, friend, Sherlock. Oh, right. Yeah. Lestrade's like, anyway, might as well get a few questions out of the way until the lab can tell us whether that tooth is yours or not. Sherlock's like, oh, if we must. Sort of gets out his phone, starts looking at it. We can see he's got a photo of the mass grave ritual, sort of paying way more attention to that than the actual interrogation. Lestrade starts off. He's like, all right, where were you 2 nights ago? Sherlock, completely distracted. Where was the sun? Sort of reading off the phone.
Where were you 2 nights ago? Where was the
sun?
Where
was the sun? John sort of, Sherlock! Sherlock's like, oh, I have no idea. John rolls his eyes. Lestrade's like, what do you mean you have no idea? Sherlock's still distracted. He's like, oh, I'd injected a substantial amount of cocaine that night, which rendered my short-term memory completely inert. John's like, oh, that's helpful. Lestrade tries to continue on anyway. He's like, did you know Mr. Brunton? Sherlock's, who? Lestrade's, the butler. Oh, no. Lestrade continues, what about the maid, Rachel Howes? Sherlock figures something out from his phone. He's like, of course. Lestrade takes that as he's going, he did know the maid. He's like, you did? What? I don't know. What did she look like? Lestrade, we haven't been able to figure that out yet. Sherlock stands, no matter. We can ask Musgrave once we get back to the manor. I need to go back to there now. Lestrade's like, oh, hold on, I'm not done yet. Sherlock rolls his eyes, sort of ready to give an arrogant monologue. It's like, this is a waste of time. Either I'm a part of this or I'm not. Either way, my skills are wasted sitting here, whereas at the manor I can be of some use. John's like, oh, what do you mean? Sherlock strides from the room. I've solved the Musgrave ritual. Cut to John, Sherlock and Reginald Musgrave standing in front of this large oak tree. The sun centered behind it, and they stare up at it for a few moments in silence before Musgrave asks, why are we looking at a tree? Sherlock just completely ignores the question, instead asks him how long like the ritual's been around for. Musgrave answers, I think it's been around since like the Norman Conquest.
Did you say the sun was rising?
Yeah, it was above the tree. The
sun rises in the east, doesn't it?
It does.
Sherlock looks up to the tree and we see a measurement rule up next to it in his mind that climbs to the top of the tree. And he can see that it's around 23 feet. Sherlock's sort of talking to himself.
Yes. How far away is the east? Is it 23 feet away?
That's my phone. Check this.
Sherlock says to himself, yes, that's about right. And then asks Musgrave, are there any elm trees on the property? Musgrave, oh, well, there used to be one over here. He points to this old stump, but it got struck by lightning. We had to cut it down. Sherlock's, any others? Oh, no. We've got some beech trees, though. Sherlock rolls his eyes at his idiocy and quickly strolls towards the stump. Musgrave asks John, he doesn't like beech trees? John sort of says, not today. They follow Sherlock sure. over the stump and he's sort of saying again to himself, oh, I suppose it's impossible to find out how high the tree was. Musgrave perks up. He's like, oh, I know that. My old tutor used to make me find the heights of trees around the property to practice trigonometry. John and Sherlock look at him. Musgrave's like, what? He's waiting. What are you looking at me for? It's like, how high was it? Oh, it's about 64 feet. Then Sherlock asks him, did Miss Howes ever ask you about the size of the tree? And Musgrave's like, yeah, she did actually. Oh, why's that? Sherlock doesn't answer. He's just like, as I thought, I'll need a peg and some string. Still clueless, Musgrave's like, oh, great. They look at him again. Oh, yeah, I'll go get it, shall I? Cut to Sherlock walking from the shadow of the oak tree towards where the elm was and explains how the part of the ritual mentions oak, elm and shadows was a measurement. Sherlock measures the shadow of the oak and explains, based on that, he can work out what the shadow of the elm tree would have been, and he starts to measure that out too. Once he gets to the tip of where the elm tree shadow should have been, he goes to plant his stake in and finds there's another hole there from someone who has recently planted a stake in the same spot. He then starts pacing out steps, occasionally turning left and right as he follows the Musgrave ritual's instructions. Musgrave and John sort of follow him. Musgrave is delighted. Couldn't be happier. They end up in this sort of old stone passageway and Sherlock stops. He's sort of thinking, oh, it should be here. Then John says, and under Sherlock, which is part of the ritual. Sherlock's like, right, to Musgrave. Salah? Musgrave's like, oh, yes. Points to a nearby staircase. They head down and open this cellar. The first thing that hits them is this horrible smell. Clearly there's a dead body around somewhere. The room looks like it hasn't been used for ages. There's like dust and debris everywhere, except for this old flagstone in the middle of the room that has this ring sticking from it. The idea that you can pull it up. Sherlock turns to Musgrave. He's like, now might be a good time to call the police because I think we've found our butler. Cut to two police officers are pulling away the flagstone and they reveal, sure enough, the dead body of the butler. He's got this big head wound, but underneath him they find an empty chest. Whatever was in it must have been taken, hence the reason it's empty, presumably by the maid. Here I've got a bit of a blank spot. I didn't really know how to fill this out. Basically, they're kind of, John and Sherlock are investigating the maid and trying to find stuff out about Rachel Howes, but can't really find anything. Again, like, you want to flesh this out, but there's also probably some sort of montage about Sherlock trying to solve his parents' break-in throughout all this, but he's sort of not really getting you anywhere. And we sense that...
Is he also coming down off the drugs? Like, is this the nice moment where you have, like, John's, like, trying to look after him as he's coming off being on heroin for ages?
Yeah, let's throw that in. I mean, it's not my bitch, but yeah, that's probably good. Like I said, like, there's a bit of a blank spot here, so anything you feel can get thrown in.
Do you have the, like, so while they're trying, so maybe he's, like, focusing on the maid case, and then while they're, like, solving the maid case, he's, like, phone rings, he just, like, hangs up, like, throws it away. John's phone rings, and he just grabs the phone, looks at it, throws it away as well, and John's like, what are you doing? He's like, it's my mum. She wants to know about the break-in, and I don't have any ideas. Like, and maybe you do it again, and, like, they're doing something else, and it's like, we need to go into these archives, and they go to a library, and they can't log in, and the access has been restricted. He's like, why is access been restricted? He goes, Mycroft, mum's talking to him. He wants to know if we know anything about the thing. Yeah, well, I don't have any leads yet.
Okay.
Like, so maybe that's the running gag of that is that his parents
as well
to
as him getting
people,
like, more annoyed that he can't figure it out. Because this is a simple crime, but he can't figure it out.
Yeah.
And we also get, like, a bit of a sense John is actually getting more and more, because they found this tooth fragment from Sherlock, he's like, Sherlock, but what were you doing that night? You know, and Sherlock sort of says, well, I remember talking to someone, but that's kind of all he can really, like, that hazy memory from the start.
So have they confirmed the tooth fragment with Sherlock's yet?
They haven't yet, no.
Okay, cool.
Is it also a case of that he's like, on any given day, it's not even drugs. It's like, oh, it was irrelevant, so I don't remember. Because there's that great bit in, I think, the second episode or the third episode of the first season when he doesn't know about this, like, basic astronomy because it's not important to him.
Yeah.
But it's like he doesn't know that the sun goes the planets go around the sun, way around.
Yes. But we get the sense that John is actually starting to worry that, fuck, maybe Sherlock did have something to do with this. Like, he shot Magnusson. Who knows what he might be capable of.
There's like more little breadcrumbs that could point
exactly,
to Sherlock.
Exactly.
Yeah, like maybe he was seen getting off, like, the train near where the manor is or something.
And we even sense that Sherlock's sort of getting a bit antsy too. He can't solve either case. He sort of gets the feeling that John's suspecting him. Even he's maybe starting to doubt himself a little bit. I don't know. But they go back to it sort of gets to the point where, like, Sherlock is losing. It's like, we must have missed something. We need to go back to the manor. So they go back to the manor, him and Watson, to try to find some other clue because he can't figure it out. But while they're there, that's when they get the test results. Like, Lestrade rings up and he's like, yeah, the fragment of tooth was definitely Sherlock's. So then John turns to him and he's like, Sherlock, you know, the tooth's yours. And Sherlock's trying to make excuses for it. He's like, well, maybe it was 3D printed or something. And John's like, no, they've aged it. They've even done, like, the aging thing on it. They know it's 39 years old. And Sherlock's, well, maybe it was a coincidence. And John's like, you know better than anyone. There are no coincidences. And then something hits Sherlock. He's like, you're right. And John's devastated. He's like, fuck, was that a confession? Has he remembered something that he did this? But then Sherlock's like, what? No, not about me. Like, you're not right about me. You're right about the case. He's basically saying, you're right about there being no consequences. Someone set me up. Someone wanted me to work this case. You? He sort of looks at John. He's like, no. Well, obviously you and Lestrade wanted me to work a case since you found a missing persons when Lestrade worked in homicide. Someone else. Mycroft, maybe? No, too nice for him. He sort of thinks, then something hits him. He rushes over to Musgrave and shows him a photo on his phone. He says, asks him, is this the maid? And it's a photo of Irene.
Oh, motherfucker!
Oh.
Irene Adler dressed in Dominatrix gear, and Musgrove's like, oh yes, oh, she was never dressed like that, though.
Holy shit.
There's only a couple of people this could be. Is Damo about to blow my mind? The answer is
holy fucking shit.
So then he turns to Watson. He's like, you said that tooth fragment is 39 years old. He's like, I may be 39, but my teeth, my adult teeth, are not. Sherlock pulls out his phone and calls someone. We cut to a phone ringing, a hand, female, picks it up. We see that it's attached to Irene Adler. And Sherlock just asks her, you stole my baby teeth from my parents' house.
Oh,
that's fucking great.
That's so good.
Oh, it's just good because it's a mystery. It's not inside its own self.
Oh, boss.
Self-referential enough to be okay, though. Continue unmolested.
All right. And I'm like, Sherlock, don't you remember? Cut back to Sherlock, and he's in the chair where we first saw him. He's mumbling away about how his parents kept all his trophies, his ribbons, and the last thing he sort of mumbles is, even my baby teeth. Then John wants to know what's going on, and he's like, it's Irene Adler, and John's like, she's alive, because at this point he still thought she was dead.
Yeah.
And Sherlock's like, yes, you know, catch up, John, sort of thing.
Obviously.
And then Sherlock starts to explain. He explains how Irene must have worked as a dominatrix for Musgrave's father, hence the rings above the bed. How she must have seen the ritual and realized that it led to something important. She came back as a maid after the father died and figured it out. But then Musgrave sprung her, so she had to get it quickly. The door was too heavy because we saw the two cops pulling on it earlier. She couldn't do it by herself, so she got the butler involved. And then Sherlock sort of stops, except he doesn't know what happens next. Then Irene, who's been listening on the other end of the phone, takes over. She goes, except you called me. I went over to see you and you were a mess. Flash to Sherlock sitting in the room looking like a complete mess.
Nice.
And then Sherlock goes, so the butler tried to get it himself. Then Irene continues, yes, by the time I got back to the manor, he was dead. He must have managed to lift the stone but wasn't strong enough to keep it up, so it fell on his head. Luckily, his body had wedged the door open enough that I was able to receive my prize. Then I realised I could kill two birds with one stone, so to speak, steal the treasure and give Sherlock the case that he so obviously needed.
Fuck, that's good.
So she broke into his parents' house, took the baby teeth, sort of altered one to look like the chip that Sherlock had in his mouth, then left it in the butler's room. She's like, I figured it was only a matter of time before his disappearance was noted, and I wanted to assure Sherlock was on the case. Then John's like, wait, what was the prize? And then Sherlock answers the question. He goes, the ancient crown of the kings of London. And then that's exactly what it is. And then Sherlock continues explaining, consider what the ritual says. How does it run? Whose was it? His who is gone. This was back in the Middle Ages after the execution of King Charles. Then it continues on to say, who shall have it? He who will come. Charles II, who never actually came because they got overthrown.
He never got back into the country.
Exactly.
Yeah, because he's hidden France. Oh, this is, fuck, you're good, Damien.
So it's basically,
using your full name. That's how impressed I am.
So basically the Musgrave ritual died in secret with no one ever knowing what it was hiding and just got passed down descendant to descendant without them ever knowing the meaning of it until, and then Irene says, me. Then Sherlock goes, one more thing. Why'd you take the photo? And so the other rectangle-y thing was this photo. And we see her looking at this photo of baby Sherlock dressed like a nerd or something, I don't know.
Probably a pirate.
Like a pirate.
No, we don't want any connection to it at all. So.
No.
I imagine is just he's like so stoic as like a four-year-old.
That's what annoyed me is that he was whimsical. I don't imagine Sherlock ever being whimsical in his life.
No, but mate, he was whimsical before he was traumatized by sister killing his best mate and convincing him it was the dog.
That didn't happen.
No, there's baby sister. I don't know, man.
There's
fucking
been too many references to the East in this pitch for me to.
Are you sure it's Irene Adler and not Irene Eastler?
I will hit you.
Okay, I'm going to stop.
So he asks, why the photo? She basically says, I couldn't resist. And then Sherlock says, I don't suppose you'd be giving the crown back then. Irene says, if you can find me, maybe. Sherlock says, the game is on. Then Musgrave goes, amazing.
He said the thing.
Cut to Baker Street. Mrs. Hudson's sort of like in the back room and John's dragging Sherlock in. He's doped up. Mrs. Hudson's like, oh, no, Sherlock. I'd hoped he was all over that by now.
That's a really good...
It's an eerily good...
That was easily my best one out of all of them.
Boy, Hudson and Lestrade have been... Mrs. Hudson, though.
It's the way you said Sherlock. Can you do it again?
Old Sherlock.
Oh!
Is it wrong that I have a bit of a semi?
I mean,
you've got a semi over a guy your age doing an impression of a very old woman... Yeah, that's a bit wrong.
You know what?
No, I'm okay, I can see it.
I don't want to be right.
That's wrong.
So he comes in, he's all doped up. John's dragging him, and he's like, "Oh no, he's over that. He's just been to the dentist." And then Sherlock, like a big cheesy grin, and his tooth has been fixed. And John's like, "They had to use the strong stuff. He was a squirmer." End episode.
Damo,
good.
Do you know what's great about that?
What's that, buddy?
I'm happy.
Me too.
Yeah.
I'm happy. It was a mystery, and it ended, and I'm happy.
And had like a little bit, like, because that's one thing that like I've always been like, is Arya Nadler ever coming back?
Yeah.
Is it ever going to like, because, you know, they've alluded to her, but she gets never
that
really...
passing bullshit mention in season
yeah,
four.
Yeah, no, goes back herself. Yeah,
she messages me on my birthday.
Yeah. I just, you know, where was the East Wind is the only
there
thing.
Were, oh, like, see, that's the thing. There was no fucking East Wind.
Nah, I'm on board. I'm on board with that.
100%. Good. Loved it. Yeah, loved it.
So like I said, there's a few blank spots in the middle.
I think we
have a few red herrings. I mean,
based on one of the original stories?
It is. So Musgrave Ritual was the original story.
Yep.
So I sort of stole the general beats from that.
And so what happens in the original? I haven't read that one, but what?
Much of what I've written.
Cool.
Except it's obviously way back in Victorian times.
And it's not Irene Adler who's
it's not Irene Adler. It's actually the butler. I've swapped the maid and the butler around. Yeah. So okay. Basically the maid.
So in quintessential Sherlock style.
Right.
We're just swapping
things yes. around. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, the maid had what had happened? I'm trying to remember now. I think the butler, they did find the
butler did it is basically
the butler did it, yeah, pretty much. And I'm like, oh, I don't want that. But no, the butler was the one caught reading the ritual. He did go off and brain himself on the...
And then the maid stumbles along and finds the treasure.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, he gets the maid to help him, but even the two of them together aren't strong enough, so he still brains himself. And she's like, oh, shit, he just died. Then steals the crown.
And fucks off.
Well, then she panics and throws it in this lake near the house, and they end up drudging it up and not knowing what it is, and at the end it's revealed to be the crown. But I knew I wanted Irene Adler in there.
Yeah, no, that was a good little reveal.
Yeah,
that was old school Sherlock, in that the mystery is self-contained, but there's enough little snippets. Sherlock behaves like Sherlock. Yes. John behaves like John. None of the characters behave like... It's just good.
Yes.
Stephen Moffat... You're fired. Damo, you're hired.
Oh, look, thanks, buddy. But no, like, because that was the thing. Like, I wanted to go back to a complete story in and of itself.
Yeah.
I wanted, it could have at times been too much fun, but he was also getting over drug addiction, so maybe
a bit
drama
there.
There was
way to it, but also, like,
Sherlock is still
mystery.
Fun.
Yeah.
Like, Sherlock's
well,
fun.
Well, that's it. And, like, the last season didn't feel that fun.
The problem is that, like, it just seems to have this, like, really... enormous binary between being like goofy and really dark.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to hit that like...
That sweet middle ground.
That sweet middle ground that it used to hit.
It's like that really dumb bit in the second episode of four where Hudson shows up with Sherlock in the boot and he predicted everything. Yeah. That's dumb.
It's too far. Yeah. And again, it's never... They stop the logic. Sherlock's just amazing Sherlock. And like especially that first episode of season four, shit's happening and Sherlock's, figuring out a whole bunch of different things. And they just allude to all of it. They never actually tell you how he's doing on him. And that really pissed me off. This is a show about logic. This is a show about all the elements coming together. It wasn't there. There's no deduction.
Yeah.
The humor had been stripped away. John was bleak. You know what I mean? Like, it just went
in
the
wrong. Is he a silver fox, though? Is it? Because that was great. Martin Freeman is the silver fox.
Yeah.
All of your obsession with Martin.
What do you mean? What don't you get?
He's been a silver fox for a while. Wasn't he a silver fox in fucking Civil War?
But it's so slicked back in this.
Yeah,
line.
But it's like John. Yeah, but he's got short hair in Civil War and he's American.
Yeah.
This is John Watson with silver hair.
Who cares?
It's doing things for me, Gabe. It's doing things for me.
Was his totally retrofitted personality doing things for you as well?
Nope, that was bad.
That was
very bad.
You're a slut for hair, Tom.
Sure I'm.
No, look fair.
I'm a slut for hair.
All right. I'll put that on a t-shirt for you, mate.
Can you?
I mean,
that should be the hashtag that goes with this episode. Hashtag sluts for hair.
Yeah, go on. Why not?
Found it. Anyway. Because obviously that's going to be the Sherlock hashtag.
Yeah.
I mean, that show does feature some amazing hair. Mrs. Hudson.
Oh,
can you do the voice?
Mrs. Hudson
can you
as
do the voice
by
one
Damien
more time?
Oh, Sherlock.
Oh, boy.
I've also got John locked away there.
Yep.
She's a bit more scornful on the John.
She's been a lot more scornful on
just
the
just give
John.
It, just give it but one or two more.
Oh, Sherlock.
I think we need to wrap this episode up because Gabe's making me uncomfortable.
On that note, I've been Damien.
I've been Tom.
I've been Gabe.
And if you have any ideas or thoughts on the Sherlock episode or the Sherlock TV series, hit us up on @sanspants@gmail.com.
Yes. That was a mismatch of both our Twitter handle and our email address.
Yeah, that's how I do them.
Yeah, so the email is sanspantsradio@gmail.com and the Twitter is @sanspantsradio.
Yes.
You got it. And if you want to hit us up on our individual Twitter handles, I'm @MiddayPajamas.
I'm @AwkwardTreed.
I'm @Gobergmoser.
That's done. Game's on.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support the show, why not become a member at SansPantsPlus.com and get early access to our shows, a bunch of exclusive content, and much, much more. That's SansPantsPlus.com.